Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new day, and thank you for kicking it off with us right here at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Got your host, James, here at 904. I am joined by Melissa Kay.
Good morning, good morning.
Beth Habhager.
Good morning.
We got some great entertainment news coming up for you in just a little bit that we're looking forward to getting into. And of course, we'll have some That Ain't Right stories, some good stories of the day. But now the way we kick off Mondays around here in the 9 o'clock hour, the kitchen's open. Something
good. That's right. It's Monday, March 20th, and we are going to open our segment by thanking our sponsors. The Kitchen's Open is sponsored by Chatterbox Catering. Chatterbox Catering is a full-service catering company equipped for all your catering needs.
If you have a holiday you want to cater to, or a wedding, graduation, family reunion, you'll want to talk to Kathy at Chatterbox. If you're missing their regular restaurant, right now during Lent, they are doing a Friday fish fry to go.
That's right. They have their full fish fry menu on Fridays, and you can order their delicious homemade food and take it home to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Just call 715-712-3393 to place your order. We'll tell you that number again at the end of the segment. But here in America, many of us ate corned beef and cabbage to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. But did you know that's not a traditional Irish dish?
That's correct.
I actually didn't know that until I started researching this topic. The tradition actually began here in the USA.
That's right.
Should we tell them a quick history of St. Patty's Day?
Okay, well, here's your little history snack. The Irish religious holiday that has been celebrated for over 1,000 years, St. Patrick was born in Roman Britain. He was kidnapped at age 16 and brought to Ireland as a slave. He escaped, but returned later to Ireland, and to his credit, and is credited to bringing them with Christianity. Mm-hmm. He used the three-leaf clover to help explain the Trinity. Irish families would traditionally attend church in the morning and celebrate in the afternoon. On this special day, they gave up a reprieve from Lent so that people could eat meat.
But they didn't actually eat corned beef. They ate salted pork or maybe lamb. So if you want to eat a traditional Irish dish that they would eat in Ireland now, something like bacon and cabbage with a parsley sauce or Irish stew would fit the menu.
Mm-hmm. In Ireland, cows were a symbol of wealth and a sacred animal. They mostly raised pigs for meat. Cows were only killed for meat if they were too old to work or produce milk. Salted beef was a food for kings.
Yes, then Ireland conquered Ireland in the 16th century. Cattle were raised as an export good to meet the demand for beef in England. In the 1660s, the English Parliament enacted the Cattle Acts, which prohibited cattle exports to England. This drove cattle prices down and kept the cows home.
The innovative Irish saw an opportunity to turn a profit. At that time, salt in Ireland had a lower salt tax, around one-tenth of the tax in England. Ireland became the hub of corned beef production. The center of the corned beef trade was in the city of Cork through the 17th and the beginning of the 18th centuries.
Fun side note, the term corned beef has nothing to do with corn.
Hmm.
Took me a long time to figure that out.
Yeah.
It was the term used to describe the size of the salt crystals used to cure the meat.
Mm-hmm.
And another interesting note from the Smithsonian magazine, and I took a direct quote from this, Irish corned beef had a stranglehold on the transatlantic trade routes supplying the French and British navies and the American and French colonies. It was at such a demand that even at war with France, England allowed French ships to stop in Ireland to purchase the corned beef.
Hmm.
That was in a, March 15th, 2013 article by Shailen Esposito.
Esposito? Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Shailen, great job. Great
Good
reporting.
Job. Yeah. But with the high demand, the prices spiked high and Irish people couldn't afford it anymore. So they ate pork and a new crop, potatoes.
But then came the Great Irish Potato Famine in the 1840s. Many families set out to America to start a new life instead of starving to death. They settled in the urban areas of New York City, along with the second largest group of immigrant population of the time, Eastern European Jewish people.
Did somebody say Jewish people? Hey, Mazel Tov, everybody.
James joins the conversation.
This is where two great traditions actually mingle and become something delicious. Because Jewish people and settled in the same place. The area soon had many kosher butcher shops. Irish people found that they couldn't purchase pork here. There, kosher butchers only process certain meats. Mm. Kosher meat of larger animals include only those who both chew their cud and have split hooves. So, unfortunately, no piggies.
Mm. Ah, that's correct. Thanks, James. I love it when two things come together to make something beautiful. And this is where corned beef as a St. Patty's Day dish in America really got going.
Yes, because beef was cheaper to purchase and they could afford to make corned beef for themselves. Mm-hmm. What else would they eat on a celebration day besides their closest thing to their traditional dishes of salted pork and potatoes?
Throw in very cheap and delicious cabbage and there you have it. One of my favorite meals.
What about the carrots?
I don't have a good answer for you on that one, Beth. Aesthetics? I think they look pretty on the plate. All I know is if an Irish person asks you if you put carrots in your stew, you'd better give them the correct answer.
Okay. So let's move on then and talk about the corned beef specifically.
That seems best.
You can, of course, buy a corned beef in the store this time of year, but other times it's not so easy to find. If you want to make corned beef at home, it's really very easy to do.
Yes, but just like very easy fish at home, it takes a little bit of planning. Like 5 to 10 days ahead of time planning. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can do that, Beth.
Of course you can, Melissa. Besides, once you try making this at home, you may never want to buy the prepackaged stuff again.
All right, let's talk through the process. It didn't sound that complicated the first time I looked at it. It's just the planning aspect that gets me sometimes.
Okay, but once you have the brine mixed up, it just sits in the fridge fairly undisturbed until you're ready to cook it.
True. And many of the spices needed, most of us have at home.
Yes, you'll need kosher salt, brown sugar, pickling spice, pink curing salt, garlic, and pickling spices.
That last one I might have to go out and find.
Yes, but you can find it at most grocery stores. The important thing is the correct salts. Pink curing salt has a dual purpose, and it's different from the pink Himalayan salt. It's both a color agent and a preservative. That's where the corned beef gets its pink tint and what keeps it fresh longer.
What about kosher salt? I've always wondered why salt is kosher. Hmm. James, can you help us here?
Sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never. No, actually, Mel, yeah, I can. I love talking about this, actually. A kosher salt refers to the style of the salt. Kosher salt is actually the same as what is in your regular salt shaker on your table right now, but it's a different size. It's a coarse grind of salt that with bigger crystals. The reason it has the name stems from its role in the Jewish culinary tradition of koshering meat. Jewish law prohibits consuming the lifeblood of the animal. So not to get into the weeds here, but it has to do with the way the meat is prepared before eating. Butchers would coat the meat in a coarse grind of salt to draw out any remaining blood. The larger crystals wouldn't cause as much salt to penetrate the meat. After settling for 60 minutes, it's rinsed several times to remove the salt from dyeing and further butchering.
Oh, okay. That's great. Now back to the recipe. You'll add all your brine ingredients to a large pot with 1 gallon of water. Bring this to a boil and whisk it to help dissolve the sugar and the salt. You'll want to simmer it a bit. They're both until, just to make sure that they're both dissolved. Then, and here's an important note, cool the brine completely.
Yes, you want your brine completely cooled because you'll be adding the cold cut of meat. Now, this is an important part, too. Corned beef is traditionally made with beef brisket, but it can be made with other cuts, too. The term corned beef just refers to the brining process. Brisket is used because it's a tough cut, and the brining process makes it deliciously tender. You can use top round or even a chuck roast if you want.
Yep. And once the brine is completely cool, put your cut of meat in a big enough container that you'll be able to completely submerge it into the brine. Mm-hmm. You might want to weigh it down with a plate or something to keep it under that water. Cover it and keep out as much air as possible. Then set it in the fridge and check every couple of days to make sure that it's still under the brine.
Then I can cook it?
Yep, after 5 to 10 days.
So there's a little bit of leeway. I'm not on a make it Saturday or else kind of schedule, right?
Yes. You don't want to go much further than the 10 days, but you do have a little bit of a leeway.
Good. So the next step is to rinse it, right?
Yes, this is an important step and one some people miss, even with the store-bought ones. You want to rinse it because you don't need any of the extra salt that clings to the meat after you take it out of the brine. It's already penetrated the meat. If you don't rinse, your dish could turn out excessively salty.
Mm. So now I just cook it and eat.
Yep, but again, this will take a bit of time.
Of course it will.
Not days, though. Just hours. You can bake it in the oven or simmer it on the stove for 3 to 4 hours. You can put it in a crock pot on low for 8 to 10 hours, or you can use an Instapot and it'll be ready to eat in about 90 minutes. Whatever method you use, you want to add the vegetables towards the end of the cooking time so that you don't get those overdone. Mm. But you still want them to soak up some of that delicious seasoning while cooking.
Yes, I've had them cook separately, and it's really just not the same.
But you don't want to just have to serve it with cabbage or potatoes and carrots. There's a bunch of other delicious side dishes that really complement corned beef.
I suppose you could prepare your potatoes however you like them. Mm-hmm. Beef and potatoes go really well together.
Yes, they do. You can make roasted russet potatoes seasoned with chili and garlic powders, Italian seasoning, and salt for an easy potato side. Or make crispy smashed baby potatoes.
Ooh.
They sound great, don't they? Here's
yeah,
how you can
do.
Make those. You boil them on a stove in a pot of water until they're tender, drain them, and let them cool just a bit. Then put them on a baking sheet and smash them with something like the bottom of a glass or a jar until they're about a half inch thick. Brush them with both butter and olive oil and season them with a little salt and pepper. Then you'll bake them for 20 minutes on the first side and then flip them over and bake 15 more minutes until they're crispy as you like.
Mmm, that sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
How about a classic green bean casserole or Parmesan roasted green beans?
Ooh.
I mention this because I found a dairy-free Parmesan I'm really excited to try out.
All right. Well, either of those would be perfect vegetables to have as a side dish. You could also try something Southern style with a squash casserole or a slow cooker mac and cheese with bacon.
How about slow cooker sweet potatoes with bacon?
Why not?
You just need sweet potatoes, orange juice, brown sugar, salt, sage, thyme, butter, bacon, and 3 hours.
Wow, Melissa, you're actually planning ahead.
Hey, it's a crock pot in a few hours, not days. I got this.
Okay.
You simply cut the sweet potatoes into cubes about a half inch square and put them into your crock pot. Get this, Beth. Hmm. You don't even have to peel them.
Wow.
Combine your other ingredients in a bowl and mix them well. Pour over the sweet potatoes. Then cut up your butter and dot that on the top. Cook for 5 to 6 hours on low or 3 hours on high. You sprinkle the bacon on right before you serve it.
Oh, nice. That sounds so yummy. If you want to keep going with a veggie streak, you could make roasted cauliflower. I don't know how, but roasting cauliflower somehow turns it into something amazing,
mm-hmm.
especially if you cut them thinner and get them the crispy brown edges all around them. Oh.
You simply
cut the head of cauliflower up, toss it in some olive oil, add some seasonings like salt, pepper, garlic, and or onion powder, then throw them on a baking sheet. You roast them in the oven for about 20 minutes, toss it and roast it for another 10 to 15 minutes, and you can add cheeses like Parmesan or Asiago if you like, or not if you're Melissa.
Hey, remember my lonely dairy-free parm in the fridge just waiting for inspiration?
Oh, yeah. Well, honestly, any side that you can think of will go well with corned beef, cheesy corn casserole.
Or just cream corn bake like my mom used to make.
Mm-hmm. Or crispy baked onion rings.
Oven roasted veggies.
Cheddar chive mashed potatoes.
Maple oven roasted carrots.
Oh, or even slow cooker succotash with corn, lima beans, and tomatoes if you like those things.
Yeah, I'm out on that one. But it sounds like a fun culinary adventure. It's mm-hmm. the tomatoes this time.
Oh.
So, and we found these recipes for today's side dishes on thehappierhomemaker.com. There's several others there you should check out.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever you decide to serve with your corned beef, you're not locked into potatoes and cabbage since, well, guess what? We're past St. Patrick's Day.
And we're not locked in the first place if you're making it at home.
I am going to try to make my own corned beef at home now. Mm-hmm. What cut do you think I should try if I can't find brisket?
Remember, it doesn't really matter. Whatever you choose will come out tender and delicious. Just remember to rinse it before you cook it.
Oh, yeah. That's the part I forgot.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today on our Kitchen is Open segment. We hope you learned something along the way.
And we hope you laughed with us. Mm-hmm. We would love to hear your feedback about our segment, and if there's anything you would like to hear about, we're working on the best way to connect with our audiences, and we'd like your feedback.
So we have a SurveyMonkey form that you can fill out on our WFHR web Facebook page with just a simple questions. Please take a moment to fill it out. We would love to hear from you.
As always, we want to send out a big thank you to our sponsors, Chatterbox Catering, for sponsoring our Kitchen Open segment.
If you have catering needs, contact Kathy at Chatterbox, and she will find you the perfect menu for your party. I'll bet she knows the secret to making a perfect corned beef for your party, and if you don't have, then you don't have to lift a finger.
For sure. Whatever your catering wants, contact Kathy at 715-712-3393 and let Chatterbox Catering cook up something good.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Great episode, you guys. That was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the information and the fun that you guys have with that. Also, saying the word succotash.
Suffer and succotash.
We do not have the word succotash brought up in our English diet nearly enough. Thank you both for the great work. And a shout out, of course, to Kathy and everybody at Chatterbox. Mm-hmm. We appreciate our friends over there so great, so much. Get some good catering in your life. Get some Chatterbox in you.
Absolutely.
Take a break. We'll come back with some entertainment news for you on the morning show here at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody, to the morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Great episode of The Kitchen's Open. Be sure to listen every Monday at 9:04 for The Kitchen's Open. Again, great job, you guys. Love that.
Thanks, James.
Wanted to dive into this one. Oh, and that's what I also wanted to mention. We have a survey, as you both touched on and everything. That survey, again, at the morning show at WFHR. Go ahead and like our Facebook page and answer the questions on that survey. Get in.
Yeah, please.
So getting into our entertainment news, we start in a melancholy spot where actor Lance Reddick passed away unexpectedly last week. He's only 60 years old. I understand Reddick, not a household name, but one of those guys that I think if you saw, you're like, wait a minute, don't I remember him from this? Or didn't I know him in that? He passed away of suddenly from natural causes. Reddick played Lieutenant Cedric Daniels on HBO's series The Wire, maybe his most famous known role. Mm-hmm. He was also Sharon, the hotel concierge in the John Wick movies.
Okay.
Oz, Fringe, Lost, White House Down, Godzilla vs. Kong. He is one of the definitions of character actor. Mm-hmm. And they used to say that term as an insult to actors. I can't speak for others, but I will say for me, it's one of the highest compliments I can give you. One of the biggest cruxes that can happen to an actor is being typecasted.
Right.
A character actor is almost untypeable.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot think of many better compliments you can give to another actor than saying you are a character actor. You are incredibly chameleon-like, and that is Lance Reddick. Lance could do some really heavy, dark, serious stuff, and then he could make you laugh your tail off with other things. You look at the interviews, and I followed him on Twitter, and he did a lot of things with his kit, with his animals, and it was just such a sweet soul.
Aww.
Just seemed like just a sweet soul. He he's got a lot of voice work that he did, and he's got a lot of projects still coming up. He was on Young Sheldon, so like a current TV show and stuff he was on as well. But he did this TV show called Corporate from 2018 to 2020. That was on Comedy Central, and it wasn't a very popular show, and it didn't do that great. But he was the owner of like a Fortune 500 company, basically, and evil but funny evil. Like, just he was so good at it. Just one of those guys I loved. Every time I saw that Lance Reddick was in something, I knew I was going to enjoy his performance.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been let down by one performance of his. Great actor. I saw that news and it hit me like somebody punched me in the gut. Like,
yeah.
I just didn't see that coming.
60 is not very old.
It's
no,
very young.
No. Keanu Reeves and John Wick director Chad Stahelski announced that the upcoming fourth film in the series will be dedicated to Lance. They also called him, quote, the consummate professional and a joy to work with. John Wick Chapter 4 actually comes out on Friday. Reddick had several projects already completed. The John Wick spinoff, The Ballerina, a remake of White Men Can't Jump, and Disney Plus series Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Okay.
If you played video games in the last 20 years, chances are you heard him because he did a lot of voice work in video games and even face work in them.
Hmm.
Such a beautiful human being and a great actor. Will be sorely missed. Thoughts with his, my heart's with his friends and family.
Yeah.
Maybe not as hard to let this one go. And I'm actually going to take a step back and let Beth, for once, run things a little bit
more. Okay.
I'm putting you on the spot,
Beth. Oh, no.
Because remember what a huge shakeup it was when Tyra Banks replaced Tom Bergeron and Aaron Andrews?
Yeah.
Well, after three seasons as a host, Tyra is already stepping down. She said she wants to focus on her business and entrepreneurship.
That's one way to spin it.
Yeah, that's called spinning 101, everybody. She added, quote, "I think it's time to graduate from the dance floor." Okay, I don't get that. How do you graduate from a dance floor?
I mean, there are dance schools, but you don't graduate from them.
But it's not like this is dance school. This is not, this is almost the opposite.
To have a farewell performance.
There's no word if this has anything to do with it, but Dancing with the Stars moved from ABC to Disney Plus last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Judge Len Goodman also announced his departure recently.
Mm-hmm.
He's been with the show since it debuted back in 2005. Now, that one is a little bit tougher for people. People have been a little more like giving him his flowers and everything.
Right.
With Tyra, there are some people that stopped watching the show because of her, and now are going to come back to the show because she's off of it. So, I mean, that's, you don't see that very often where you lose somebody of a big name and it's actually going to probably help your show. But since she took the job, all there has been complaining. She's a diva on set. She doesn't show up on time. She doesn't treat people with respect.
Mm.
She's one of these stars that, because I've never actually been around. I've been around some divas, but even I've never been around the whole Miss Banks has it in her contract where you can't make eye contact with her. Like, what the what?
What?
Like, what are you talking? Like, that's an actual, I thought it was just a joke in like movies and TV shows and everything. Like that, they say this about a diva actor. Don't look so-and-so in the eye. They don't like that. You know, that was always a joke. I didn't know that there was an actual thing. This is the first time I've ever actually heard that it was a thing.
That's crazy.
Like,
what has she done to have the ego of this? Other than you were pretty for a while, for a moment in time there, and you were on some magazines. Like, okay, after that, what have you done? Like, I'm not at all trying to make light of her or her career or talk down about her or her career. But I do think that if you're going to have this kind of divaism or have a contract like that, you ought to be able to back it up at least.
But for her, she was discovered at like age 13 or 14.
Yeah.
So this is the only type of life that she knows is to be recognized for who she is and to be. And she was one of those first generations of quote unquote supermodels.
Yeah.
So she's used to the recognition and having that power. And then, she did have a very successful TV show with the America's Next Top Model.
True.
And she did okay. The nice thing about that one is she had a panel that she could bounce off of.
Mm-hmm.
And so she appeared in that one a lot more congenial, and it seemed like a good fit for her. When she came on to Dancing with the Stars, she tried to make it all about her.
Yeah.
Every time she would walk out at the beginning of the show, she treated it like a catwalk, and it was all about her outfit, which she changed at least once during the course of the television show.
Yeah.
And the two seasons where she hosted by herself felt awkward. And didn't help that it was also during the pandemic, where everybody had to be socially distanced and all of that.
Network change, too.
Yeah,
that doesn't help. To be fair, that doesn't help either. But
she just didn't have the personality that you need to host something. Because when you're a host, it's about making the other person look good, not about making yourself look good.
I think it's part of the reason why a guy like Tom Bergeron is so good at what he does and always has been. Tom's been doing this since we were kids. Like, he's been emceeing stuff and been the host of, shows and everything. There's a reason that man has continued to work for like three decades or two decades at least 2 decades.
Please tell me that Alberto was continuing then. Is he going to be the host then?
It doesn't say. It doesn't say they have anybody yet. It looks like they haven't settled yet.
Okay.
It actually looks like this was something that came up kind of like they wanted to let Tyra go, but they wanted it to make it her decision.
Right.
Like, they let her decide to leave and stuff, because then you wouldn't get as much backlash, if there is any. Because you just never know. You could be thinking you're doing the right thing, and then all of a sudden the masses will let you know, hey, we're mad about this, or whatever. Not getting that with this one. No, not getting that with this one.
Well, and I feel bad for those that loved the show and then because of her stepped away from it, because that does the dancers injustice. Yeah. These are hardworking. This is their career. This is what they do. And then not to be able to support them because you don't like the host.
Yeah.
I mean, I was not the biggest fan, but I still enjoyed watching the creativity and the growth of the stars as they would work with their pros.
I was going to ask, so you did you continue to
I did.
Watch? Good,
I
good.
Did.
Good
and, for, and for me, it was about the being a former dancer. It was all about the dancing and having done some choreography, watching the creativity of these pros as they put together the dances for their star was just amazing to me.
We've talked a little bit off air on air about this. I understand that the show for you is a little more than just mm-hmm. you know a kind of judging contest and
yes.
everything. You enjoy the art of dance, so
I do.
I was happy to hear that she didn't take that from you.
No.
That she didn't make you not want to watch the show. That's good. That's cool. One last note I wanted to mention as far as entertainment news. You heard about it from CBS News right at the top of the hour there. Last night, Adam Sandler, the Sandman, was awarded his bronze bust of Mark Twain and speculated that one day might be the weapon used to bludgeon me in my sleep. God, I love Adam Sandler. Host of comedic and entertainment royalty gathered at Washington's Kennedy Center as Sandler was presented with the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Presenters included Drew Barrymore, Conan O'Brien, Chris Rock, Jennifer Aniston, Steve Buscemi, Dana Carvey, Louis Guzman gave testimonials on Sandler's longevity in his career. Sandler's longtime writing and producing partner, Tim Harity, joked that the pair were responsible for 31 motion pictures with a combined Rotten Tomatoes score of 59.
Nice.
There's a couple of things that the Sandman has done throughout his life. Of course, the Hanukkah song, mm-hmm. and as I've heard many other fellow Jewish people mention before, he, along with the Beastie Boys, have started to make being Jewish cool, but mm-hmm. not so much really like traditional cool. We mean like... hey, cool, like acceptable, like, hey, it's not right. a big deal, it's not mm-hmm. awkward, these kind of things. Adam Sandler, right away, early on in his career, started putting his money aside so that he could run his own production company, so that he could hire his friends and do his own type of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Sandler was never interested in winning the Mark Twain Award or being a household name, but he loved comedy, liked making people laugh, and he wanted to work with his friends. So he starts Happy Madison Productions, and his first thing is hiring all of his buddies. And his, mm-hmm. but now that we tend to like kind of push back on that sometimes and everything because it usually ends up being a family member or a celebrity or somebody like that. Adam did this with a lot of struggling actors, a lot of struggling comedians, and giving them opportunities. And then going from there to like having like cameos from a Chris Farley or a Chris Rock or somebody like that because they were established already.
Mm-hmm.
But he loved them, they were friends of his, so
right.
he still wanted to continue to work with them, of course. And then there is this other part of Adam Sandler that is the writer, the creator. Where he is, that is incredibly talented, and doesn't. I don't know if the writer Adam Sandler or the song guitar player that guy has ever gotten his due.
Mm.
I'm not sure that guy ever got his due, because before we could give due to that, all of a sudden we found out if you were smart enough to watch the movie Punch Drunk Love back in the day. Oh. Adam Sandler can also do drama.
Yeah.
It turns out, wait a minute, this guy's not just Mr. Oh, I'm crazy pen on the head guy, you mm-hmm. know, and all that from Saturday Night Live. No, it turns out Mr. Sandler is incredible thespian and can
mm-hmm.
act. And whether it's Spanglish or Punch Drunk Love or Uncut Gems, just any of these movies, you are going to see that Adam Sandler is a all-around incredible talented actor. So happy for him. He deserves this.
Mm-hmm.
Very well earned, and looking forward to seeing the Mark Twain Awards. I believe they usually show this like a month later or whatever it is. So I'm looking forward to seeing it when it comes out. Right now, we're going to get to some actual news, Melissa's news now,
yes.
and everything, because entertainment news is really entertainment news. But this is actual news coming up for you. Melissa's got that coming up right here on the morning show at WFHR, locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody. Morning show here at WFHR. We hope you're having a good one out there. Melissa, Beth, and James here with you. And we're going to dive into some more topics here. And this one is an interesting one, I think. The most polite state. The polite? Most polite state. That is where we are going to go next. Who has the best manners? A lot of people talk about Southern hospitality, but there's a report out on the most polite states in the U.S., and it highlights a different part of the country. The report analyzed Google searches, including polite terms like please, thanks, excuse me, beg your pardon, cheers, friendly, sir, and thoughtful.
Okay.
In the end, Montana was named the most polite state with more than 270,000 searches per 100,000 residents containing polite terms. So population didn't really play into this as much as they did a pretty good job of like kind of making it so that did not play into this. Because I would automatically say, well, of course it's more polite. There's less people, less likelihood of, you know, bickering and all this stuff. But I think they took that part of the argument away by doing it by per resident, you know, per 1,000 residents.
Right.
Vermont was second, followed by Alabama, Minnesota, Delaware, Wyoming, Arkansas, Utah, Hawaii, and Idaho.
Okay.
On the other end, people in California might need a little help with their manners. It's a much bigger population, but they had only 10 searches per 100,000 residents containing polite terms. Kansas was second worst, followed by Illinois, Louisiana, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Oregon, Massachusetts, Florida, and West Virginia.
Interesting.
So you look at the, Vermont, a small, Montana, Vermont, a little smaller, Alabama, Minnesota, not as small. All four of those, what are the, I don't know if there is a city that's bigger than Chicago, than any of those cities. Their biggest city is bigger than Chicago or New York or Los Angeles or something like that, you know, like that, like kind of thing. So I think that does play into this a little bit, city life.
Not small towns.
Not the amount of people, city people is what I'm talking about. And like I think Chicago is actually a really good example, even though that they came up. Illinois came up as the fourth or third worst on this one. Because my whole life going to Chicago, you run into the same thing in a breath. You'll run into somebody bumping into you and giving you a funny look like you did something wrong. And at the same that same person, like a block or two later, will be holding the door open for you. Now they won't they won't look at you when they do this. They won't acknowledge you as a human being, maybe, but they will hold the door open for you. There is still this Midwestern kind of mentality and manners just in city life. I don't think people in the city most of the time are trying to be rude. They're trying to get somewhere. They got everything is time sensitive in the city, where country living not as much time sensitive. So you have a chance to be a little more polite. You can stand by your mailbox and wave at your neighbors as they drive by a little more often. You ain't got nowhere to be. It's a little different. So I think that needs context as well. I think there are plenty of people. I know for a fact there are plenty of people who are not rude, but they ain't got the time for politeness. So they're bopping around. They're moving. There's plenty of people, and I can hear my nod and my voice saying there's always time for manners. I have it right in my head. But realistically, I think that that plays into this too.
Well, there's definitely a difference in a city subculture than there is in a rural subculture. And it's apparent if you move around a lot or if you visit different areas, you can tell the difference between being in a city and being more rural.
Well, I also wonder, too, if they're looking at search data, like, sometimes you need to be very precise in what you're searching for. And if you're adding a bunch of extra words, that's going to bring back, you know, not the results that you want. I don't put please when I'm writing searching for something.
I'm not a fan of almost any of these surveys or any of these things that involve that. Just grabbing Google data or search engine data. I shouldn't just say Google. It's any search engine that they're using all search engines for this. When it comes to that, I don't feel like they should know this better than anybody. How many times do you Google something, just a fleeting thought, and just, how do you say please in Spanish? How do you know, something like that? Does that mean that you're looking to say, you know, when you take your trip to, you know, a Latin country, you're looking to say please? Maybe not. Maybe you just are curious. Hey, how do you say this word in this or whatever?
I'd be interested to find out if they're pulling their data simply from what people are typing into their devices or if it's using the Google Assistant. Because sometimes when the Google Assistant doesn't understand me, I get a little frustrated.
Yeah, I hear you.
I didn't say that. I said this.
I was trying to see where Wisconsin ranked in this list, and they don't do it like that.
They don't.
No, they don't have it like as a 1 through 50 kind
somewhere
of ranking.
Somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would think, yeah. The most, here's some key takeaways. The top slang compliment is purr, followed by the positive term stoked.
What? Purr?
The top slang compliment is purr. P-U-R.
Like P-U-R-R?
I have never heard of that.
Huh.
Me neither.
The most popular terms of endearment are beautiful and darling. Now, darling, I heard, is not one. I couldn't tell you if I've ever used that word or not, but darling, I heard, is one that's kind of like gone out of fashion.
I think it depends on if you add the G or not and how it's said.
Darling is not okay. Darling is okay.
It can be. It also depends on the person saying it and the tone of voice.
If there's a tone
and stuff. There's a gentleman who is a little bit. Feels a little more uncomfortable and says, darling, which is more of a, in some ways it can be misogynistic.
Yeah, it can be talking down a little bit. Well,
exactly.
Look here, darling.
Yep.
Look here, little darling. No, that don't work, though. No.
But then, then there's waitresses that come up and, hey, darling, what you going to order today?
Right. Which it just makes you warm inside.
Right. Yeah. So there you go. It's all in the delivery and the intent behind it.
It's interesting. I find it very, all of this, the politeness part, because I do think that that's something that should never go out of style.
No.
Please, thank you. That stuff should never go out of style. There's a lot to be said for that. And is it old-fashioned? Does it sound kind of lame or tack or not cool or something like that? I don't care. Not everything needs to be cool. Everything needs to evolve and grow. We got it right with please and thank you. Mm-hmm. We don't need to look bigger than that. Having more of that creates more empathy in society, creates more care, more questions, more concern, more follow-up. There's no downside to having more of this in our society.
Mm-hmm. I have questions. So how do you use purr in a sentence?
Exactly.
You're purr-dy? I don't know. That's all I got.
James, you're looking pretty purr today.
I don't know.
I
double checked just to make sure that this was they were right about. Like,
we
wasn't
need
a typo.
To go find a teenager.
Yes, we do.
What does purr mean? And maybe they'll tell us. Maybe they won't. Because if we start using it, then they'll stop.
I thought of this too, Beth. I'm like, okay, if we want to be hip, we should talk to the young people, right? Well,
right.
I was talking to a 3-year-old the other day, and she didn't seem to know any of these terms or anything like this. I don't know. I think you jumped
a little bit too far.
Oh, I went too far.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, though. That's very helpful.
You're welcome.
I thought it was a. Yep. I didn't think
That's
some of those words she
James.
Was telling me were.
Yep. They have their own language down that age range.
No.
Yes.
The matter of fact, the way that they take things.
Oh, yes.
I forget about that sometimes, but it's so matter of fact. I'm such a metaphor and idiom person.
Oh, no.
That I drive little children crazy.
Yes.
Like I really got to get better about that. I really got to grow up. I got to grow up, not them. I do. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have some more fun on the morning show here at WFHR. Welcome back, everyone, to the morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. 9:51 on the clock. Got your host, James. I am joined by Melissa Kay.
Good morning.
Beth Habager.
Good morning.
We're taking you to the top of the hour with That Ain't Right story here, and then some good stories of the day. CBS News will come in after that. Then it's Playmakers time. Nobody ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Get in the game with your sports thoughts and feelings. We want you to call up. We are going to kick off the show today with Playmakers being joined. Randy Paul will be in with us, my partner in sports, of course. And we will be talking with GM and head coach. If you're Wisconsin Rapids River Kings, Mitch Peckman's going to be here. So Coach Peckman, we're looking forward to talking with him in just a little bit. That's gonna be a lot of fun. First, though, got to get to a That Ain't Right story. And a high-end fashion brand in New York is selling knee-high boots that look like the Teletubbies.
What?
They're bright green stiletto knee highs with a dippies. I don't know who that is. Face and arms hanging off the top of each of the boot. So they're like half shoe and half stuffed animal.
What?
A designer named Christian Cohen is taking pre-orders online. And, hey, they're pretty reasonably priced. They're only $2,500.
Oh, only.
So, I mean, you know, I'm going to pick up a couple pairs. You guys want some? I'll get some for you. All right, no problem. Yeah, the jean jacket will run you almost $600. There's a hoodie, all this.
What?
I'm trying to show them to
Beth. That is just wrong.
And so... I always try to make sure that I do this, and I apologize for not doing it before the article, but journalistically, I like to make sure that integrity stands. Mm-hmm. We take that very seriously here at WFHR. Melissa takes it very seriously. So journalistic integrity, I've never liked the Teletubbies. I have never been a fan. I did not let my kids watch the Teletubbies. It is literally the one thing that I put my foot down with my children. Like, you are not watching that. Like, luckily, they never wanted to, but if they had... It had been the one thing in life I would have been like, no.
Yeah, considering the controversy that surrounded the Teletubbies, that is very poor designing.
Yeah.
Considering the way that it looks and the location of the
location.
Toe.
Yeah. A lot of like things did not get thought through on that one. That ain't right. That just ain't right.
No.
I sent a picture to Melissa just to scare her.
Those are rather scary.
Yeah.
Why would anybody want to wear them?
No.
I can't even think of like the biggest. Like if you had created the Teletubbies,
right.
I still wouldn't be wearing those. Like no matter how proud you are, I would not be wearing those. No.
I mean, what outfit would you wear that with?
Yeah, but
you have two stuffed animal heads on your knees.
I really don't want to know. I'm afraid to even know.
Is that the new definition of a kinky boot?
Nice. I was wondering who was going to make a kinky boots reference. I didn't know if it was you or Mel. I didn't know which one of you. Knew somebody would, though. Thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Didn't want to disappoint you, James.
Yeah, good job. Nice job. Nice work. I know that Playmakers is coming up in a moment here, so why am I talking sports right now? Because you're going to want me to. Our good stories of the day kick off with an 82-year-old woman is the world's oldest hockey female hockey player, according to the Guinness World Records.
Yay!
Wow. Want to send a shout out to my new favorite person and biggest hero, Linda Sinrod of Lorton, Virginia. She was a figure skater before becoming enamored with hockey at the age of 35. Got into it a little late in life. When a friend asked her if she wanted to try the sport during a visit to a frozen pond, Sinrod enjoyed hockey so much that she became a founding member of the first women's hockey team in the Washington, D.C. area.
Wow.
Sinrod played for 10 years and then left the team for over a decade before reconnecting with her former teammates. Quote, after retiring, I looked up what my old teammates were doing and found one was coaching the Prince William Wildcats team. So at the age of 67, I decided to join them.
Nice. Okay.
Sinrod's teammates asked her to leave the Wildcats at age 75 because she was struggling to keep up with them. She didn't want to give up hockey, so she started playing in a women's league chose team twice a year. They only play twice a year.
Okay.
I've been the oldest person playing, so I have always been even curious as to how old the oldest female hockey player was eventually, and then I found out it was me. She was just kind of curious, and that's how she found out that she was.
Go.
And somebody actually kind of reached out to her about this and awarding her this and everything.
Wow.
82 years old, playing hockey. Shout out to her.
That's a way to stay young.
And while that is a noteworthy and that is a world record and everything, and that is being a hockey player.
Yeah.
Gordie Howe. I mean, all the old greats, you know, 95 still playing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, that part is not shocking, but a big shout out to her.
Good
that
for
is
her.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. And great for women's hockey.
Yes.
And our very own Badgers claimed their 7th title on Sunday.
Darn right.
Yes.
Darn right, they did. Anybody that got to see that game, we're going to be talking about it a little bit in Playmakers.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait. Oh, I love the ladies Badgers. God, I love that team. Great team. Nicely done. Good season. Another good story of the day. I want to send a shout out to Melissa for this one. She sent it over the weekend. And I did not see it right away, and I'm glad because I needed a palate cleanser right as you had sent it, Melissa. It was right around the right time.
Oh, good.
Waltz signs Universal School Meals Bill into the Minnesota law.
Yes.
And if you get to watch the video of this, please do. Surrounded by school children, teachers, advocates, and public officials, Governor Tim Walz signed a bill into law Friday to provide breakfasts and lunches at no charge to students at participating schools. It makes Minnesota the fourth state in the country to do so.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. And obviously important and great thing that he did there, and a great move by the them over there and doing this. Mm-hmm. But the video is so priceless. The video at the end of it, the kids, unprompted, the kids hug the governor.
Aww. Yeah, he starts fist bumping them. And then one little girl asks for a hug. And so then he gives a hug. And then he's fist bumping. And then more are asking for hugs. It's so adorable.
Aww.
It made me tear up.
Yeah, just thinking about it really gets me too. Mm-hmm. And a shout out to them, to the governor, and to those kids. Mm-hmm. All making that moment possible. And it's so, so genuine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I encourage people to check that one out, especially if you haven't gotten to take a look at that one yet. It'll make you smile, but it'll make you feel good.
Yes.
Your Badgers have moved on. The Badgers are going to be taking on the #1 Oregon Ducks in the NIT tomorrow.
Yay! And at least a part of my bracket remained.
I want to send a shout out to Pam, because Pam and I had the very same thought when we looked at the NIT brackets. We were hoping without hope that Wisconsin would not only keep winning, but that they would face Oregon.
Okay.
Because longtime listeners will know that we have a special sound snippet of a Carl Hilke with when Wisconsin was going to take on Oregon back in the day and his duck impressions.
Oh.
So I believe I have that. I believe I know where it is. I'm going to have it on the show tomorrow.
Okay.
As a way to kind of rile up and get the Badger fan base ready. We'll be playing that on tomorrow's show, and that'll be one of our good stories of the day.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
thank you both for a great show today. We always have fun hanging out.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing some double duty here the last couple of weeks, Beth, too. We know we had you in Friday and coming in today.
Yep.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mel, always good working with you. You and I will be hanging out tomorrow.
Yes, we will.
Have a great day, you both. Everybody, stick around for Playmakers coming up right here at... Oh, you know what? I like the way Steph says this. I'm going to let Steph do it. Go ahead, Steph.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.